Welcome to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast, informing, encouraging, and supporting your church. Your hosts are Michael Martin and Dan Busby from ECFA.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Excellence in Church Administration podcast. This is Michael Martin with ECFA, and I'm joined once again in studio by my co-host, Dan Busby. How are you doing today, Dan?
Good, and it's great to be here. I'm glad to be back for another episode and looking forward to our discussion today.
Absolutely. Me too. And let's just jump right in. I know folks are busy, so without further ado, we've got a great topic for this round of the podcast, Conflicts of Interest. In fact, we're titling it Conflicts of Interest, Proceed with Caution. And really the reason being, Dan, conflicts of interest we know have the potential to inflict a lot of harm on the church, or at the very least, they can become a distraction from our mission. And that's why we always say to proceed with caution. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. You know, in interacting with many churches across the years, I've come to see conflicts of interest as one of those sleeper topics. In a recent ECFA church governance survey, we reported on what appears to be a disinterest in conflicts of interest, because 49% of churches said they do not have a conflict of interest policy. Another 12% indicated they probably have a conflict of interest policy, but the board has not reviewed it for a very long time. Only 16% of the churches, on the other hand, said they have adopted a conflicts of interest policy, refer to it when needed, and require the board and key staff members to annually complete a conflicts of interest questionnaire related to the policy. So it's sort of hidden in the background with more urgent things like budgeting, paying bills, and preparing for next Sunday, always vying for our attention.
That's right. Like they say, Sunday is always coming, huh?
Yes.
Well, and I think probably in that statistic, the thing that troubles me or scares me the most is the ones who said that they probably have a policy, but the board hasn't reviewed it for a long time. But Dan, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, I picked up as you were talking about when it comes to conflict of interest kind of being a sleeper topic is, you know, it is kind of there in the background, except when a problem surrounding conflicts of interest does rear its ugly head, the damage can be significant unless a church has taken some of those proper precautions.
That's right.
You know, and we'll talk about some of those precautions that churches can take for conflicts of interest later in the podcast. But as always here at ECFA, I think we always try to begin with the basics, right?
Yes.
So there's no better starting point than defining what exactly is a conflict of interest. You know, it's one of those terms that I think we hear tossed around a lot, but maybe we don't stop to think about what it actually means. So, Dan, why don't you take it here and give us maybe a simple definition when it comes to conflicts of interest?
Sure, and at the risk of being too simple, we could start by just breaking down the two parts of the phrase. We have, first of all, a conflict, and secondly, between two or more interests, plural. So in a church or other organization like a business or government, a conflict of interest occurs when a leader who has a duty to promote the best interests of the church they serve at least appears to have a competing family, business, or other personal interest. When it comes to conflicts of interest scenarios in the church, we're most frequently referring to those leaders in key positions of influence over the church, like the pastor or church board members.
No, that's great, and thanks for breaking that definition down for us. I think we can make it maybe even more real here by mentioning a couple of examples that could occur in a church setting, and of course, we would say these would never occur in your church, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So for our first example, let's say that the church needs to fill a role on staff and that board members are aware of the need. We have a board member that suggests his or her family member. In this case, the board member has a conflict of interest in helping to make a staffing decision that is in the best interest of the church and also has that competing personal interest of having a family member find a job. So that's an illustration, example one of conflicts of interest. Maybe for number two, we can take a legal example. I'm an attorney, so I think it's okay if we pick on us for a little bit. With another example, let's say we've got a church board member that also serves as the church's legal counsel. So in that case, this board member and attorney would have the ability to recommend legal courses of action that would also end up generating fees to the benefit of the board member's firm. Or really, we could take that example and extend it beyond for any board member who owns a business like insurance, construction, or others that could help meet the needs of the church. Going back to our definition, Dan, of conflicts of interest, the obvious concern, right, is that we have decisions being made in the best interest of the organization and not to promote the best interest of the leader. So when it comes to conflicts of interest, what are some of the other issues besides that obvious one that you might see churches needing to pay attention to here?
Well, Michael, you're right on its face. The major issue is, are decisions being made in the best interests of the church? But in addition to the obvious, there are some other important and related issues as well when it comes to conflicts of interest. Often, leaders who might have a conflict of interest may not even be aware of it. I've heard it said before, we are often blind to our own blindness. You know, I wrote about this principle in my book on trust and shared the example about the hidden gorilla. In a short film of two teams passing basketballs, one team wearing white shirts, the other wearing black. Viewers of the film are instructed to count the number of passes between the white team, ignoring the players in black shirts. This task is difficult and completely absorbing. Halfway through the video, a person wearing a gorilla suit appears, crosses the court, does a chest thump, and moves on. The gorilla is in view for a full 9 seconds.
Wow.
Many thousands of people have seen the video, and about half of them do not notice anything unusual. It's in the counting task, and especially the instruction to ignore one of the teams, that causes the blindness.
It's amazing.
No one who watches the video without that task would miss the gorilla. People find the results of the study very surprising. Viewers cannot imagine missing the gorilla. And so the lesson is, we are not the best judges of our own conflicts of interest. Another major lesson, and maybe the most practical one, even if a leader is truly self-aware of all conflicts and can overcome any personal interests in making a decision in the best interests of the church, there is the issue of questions or perceptions that might surround the transaction.
No, that's very true. And I think that's what we've historically referred to in conversations about this over the years at ECFA as the 6 o'clock news factor, or maybe better yet, in today's world, we should call it the blog headline or the social media share test.
Right.
So, you know, it's really not to say, we want to be careful to make clear, it's not to say that in these cases or transactions involving someone with a conflict of interest that the transaction should never occur or take place. I mean, there are some situations, right, where this transaction could still truly be in the best interest of the organization. But coming back to our title again, we say the point is really to proceed with caution, because even if a competing personal interest has not interfered in any way with the leader's decision-making and an organization has taken every proper precaution, like you said, Dan, is there still some room for questions or perceptions to creep in and become a distraction from our mission? And of course, you know, just I think on a practical note, like with many other areas, we tend to say that the larger the transaction is, the more potential that we create for some of those questions or perceptions, right?
Exactly, Michael. Those are great points. And I want to reinforce something you said. It may be okay for a church to enter into a transaction with a party who has a conflict of interest, but the key question is always, is doing so in the best interest of the church? You know, these can sometimes be sticky situations, but the good news is we have a helpful framework churches can follow to protect themselves from the potential dangers of conflicts of interest.
That's right. You know us. We never just kind of leave you hanging without some help. So here we go. You know, we say as a preliminary matter, it's really important to be sure that your key leaders and board members are educated about conflicts of interest and some of those potential dangers to the church. And at ECFA, we've developed a special governance toolbox training you can use just for that purpose. And remember, too, that with the constant rotation or churning of leaders and board members, it's important to educate and re-educate folks on the conflict of interest topic. But then, you know, beyond education, the other preliminary point that we wanted to make is that it's very, very important for every church or ministry to adopt a sound conflict of interest policy that covers not only key staff, but also board members. And again, here, we do offer some help in the form of sample conflict of interest policies that your church can review and, of course, tailor that to meet the needs of your church with the consultation of professional counsel. And maybe just one other thing too, Dan, on the point about having a conflict of interest policy is that in addition to the policy itself, one recommendation that we found to be really helpful is to have leaders and board members annually complete something like a conflict of interest questionnaire or disclosure statement. And really the benefit of that is it helps re-educate on the issue and also just gives kind of a natural time or a natural opportunity for those who have a conflict of interest to come forward with that.
Exactly. And those are great preliminary steps. And, you know, I would go on to say that if a transaction involving a potential conflict of interest with a leader, for example, a pastor or a board member, should actually arise, it should never be entered into unless four requirements are met. And I'd like to share those four requirements, which are exclude, number one, number two, compare, number three, determine, and number four, document. So let's dive right into step one, exclude. All parties with a conflict of interest, direct or indirect, must be excluded from the discussion and vote related to the approval of the transaction. So in the example of the board member who owns a construction company, this board member should not be part of the discussion or vote on whether to use the board member's company for a building project. So number one, exclude. Let's look at step two, compare. The church has reliable comparability information regarding the terms of the transaction from appropriate independent sources, such as competitive bids, independent appraisals, or independent expert opinions. So again, to use our example, the church would seek competitive bids and not just take the bid from the board member's company as the only option for the project. We need to find the market rate of what others would be willing to charge. So first exclude, second compare, and then third, determine. The church's board determines the transaction as being in the best interest of the church. So first we look at the financial perspective. Is using the board member's construction company the best deal for the church? And then we would look at the non-financial perspective. This is the more difficult call and will have to be made by each church on a case-by-case basis, depending on the specific circumstances. Being in the best interest includes not only from a financial perspective, but also whether the transaction could be misperceived by givers, constituents, or the public. You know, in my trust book, I talk about the three paths for conflicts of interest and related party transactions, and one of those paths ends with the transaction not being approved, even if other steps are met, simply out of an abundance of caution due to negative perceptions or distractions that could be caused by the transaction. So to review, we've talked about to exclude as step one, to compare as step two, and determine as step three. And now step four and the final step is to document. The church contemporaneously documents steps one, two, and three. In case any questions ever comes up. And now let's look at step four, finally, to document. The church contemporaneously documents steps one, two, and three. So in case any questions ever come up, the church needs to show due diligence in this process. As someone once said, if it isn't documented, it didn't happen.
That's right. Documentation, I think it's easy to look at those four steps and think, oh, that just seems like such a minor one of the points, but I think it's so important, right? Well, I would say too that, you know, we've covered a lot of materials here, and I would recognize that, you know, when it comes to those four steps, it might be a lot to take in on the podcast, especially if you're listening to this in the car or maybe on the go. If you're looking for a reference in terms of where to find some of these four steps on our website, you can go to ecfa.church /standards and see what we call standard number 6. You know, for all of our ECFA certified organizations, we believe that conflicts of interest is such an important issue that we require these steps to be taken by all churches that are ECFA members. So I think we've done a pretty good job here covering the major issues when it comes to conflicts of interest. Just as a quick recap before we head into the answers to your question segment, just a quick recap of what we learned here. First of all, conflicts of interest can occur when a leader like a pastor or board member faces a competing personal interest when making a decision, and there's a duty to also promote the best interest of the church. So that's the first thing that we covered. And then secondly, we talked about we must be so careful to protect the church against not only the realities of conflicts of interest, right, but also those major perception issues that can occur. From there, we moved into churches should regularly remind their leaders about the dangers that are involved in conflict of interest situations and be sure that we've all adopted a sound conflict of interest policy. So we're going to try to improve on that stat that we referenced at the beginning of the podcast. And then finally, we said that in any transaction that involves a conflict of interest, the church should follow 4 steps that you covered well, Dan. Those were exclude, compare, determine, and document. And again, these are described in more detail on the standards page at ecfa.church. And again, see standard 6. So now it's time to the the answers to your question segment. And so Dan, you want to start us out with our first question?
Yes, the first question is, what are some of the key questions our board should be asking with respect to conflicts of interest? Of course, we recommend reviewing ECFA's standard 6. Compensation setting and related party transactions, including the commentary. This information is available on ECFA's website. And it would also be good for the board to review the church's own conflicts of interest policy. Is it up to date, and is it being followed? Also, does the board use an annual disclosure statement? For example, within the last 12 months, have all board members and key staff signed a conflicts of interest annual reporting statement? The second question is, ECFA refers to the front page test. What is this? Well, here's what we mean by the front page test. If a certain related party transaction were approved, is the board confident that if this transaction or decision would be reported by the media, would it cause embarrassment or damage to the ministry, its leaders, and perhaps more importantly, to God's kingdom? This is the ultimate test of a related party transaction.
Well, Dan, I just want to follow up too on one of the questions that you asked, or one of the answers that you provided to one of those questions that was asked of ECFA, and that is on that conflict of interest disclosure statement. We talk about that being done, you know, annually by key staff and by board members. When have you typically seen it to be a good time frame for organizations to, you know, make that questionnaire, that disclosure statement available? Is that typically during a board meeting, or when might that occur?
It's usually helpful, in my experience, to have board members complete the form and submit it in relationship to a certain board meeting each year. And so if the board meets twice a year, spring and fall, perhaps it's in relationship to the fall board meeting. If they meet quarterly, well, perhaps it's in relationship to the first quarter meeting. Or if they meet monthly, it's with respect to a certain board meeting. And so establish a pattern, establish a routine of when the board members complete that. And for key staff, that would be a good thing to complete at the beginning of each calendar year. And so I think those are good times. And then the one thing I didn't talk about is, what do you do with those annual disclosure statements after they're completed? Mm. Well, it'd be good for the results of those disclosure statements to be summarized and the summary information be provided to the board chair and to the CEO. And so when an issue arises during a board meeting, the board chair and the CEO can be prepared to know whether someone needs to recuse themselves from the meeting with respect to a certain transaction.
Perfect. Well, hey, Dan, thanks so much for covering those questions. We also mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, it's kind of our habit here at ECFA. We never like to present any of these situations without providing some practical help. And so we've got Tracy Weber here from our church engagement team, and she's going to provide just some information in terms of how folks can access more of these great resources. Tracy?
Hey, thanks, Dan and Michael. And as you've heard throughout the podcast, it's extremely important to educate and train our churches around the potential issues surrounding conflicts of interest. We've put together a series of great resources to help equip you and your church in this area. The first one is our toolbox. We have ECFA's Governance Toolbox on Conflicts of Interest. It's perfect for board orientation or retreat settings, and it will help your church's key leaders understand the importance of this topic. The second resource that we've already referenced today is Dan's book entitled Trust. You don't want to miss out on this book with an entire chapter dedicated to conflicts of interest, plus wisdom on over 20 other topics to enhance trust in your church. For more information and videos, quotes, and a sample chapter from Trust, visit ecfa.org/trust. And finally, Dan and Michael described the importance of adopting a sound conflict of interest policy and using an annual disclosure statement for your church. If you're interested in receiving a copy of the samples, simply email podcast@ecfa.org and include conflicts of interest in the subject line. And as always, all ECFA resources are available to the growing number of ECFA certified churches. And a selection of these resources are also available on the new Church Excel subscription, free at churchexcel.org. And that's about all for our resource highlights for the month. As always, you can interact with a whole host of other resources from webinars to the Knowledge Center and more at ecfa.church. Dan and Michael, thanks for this great lesson today, and it's back to you.
All right. Well, hey, Tracy, thanks so much for that information and just appreciate the job that you and the team have done in putting together all of those great resources for our ECFA members and also our new Church Excel subscribers. Just want to encourage folks to take advantage of those resources, like Tracy mentioned. And before Dan shares some encouragement with us from Scripture, just another quick reminder, too, to submit your questions, if you have any, for the answers to your question segment to podcast@ecfa.org. On our next episode, we're going to be covering expense reimbursement issues. So if you have any questions at your church about how to properly handle expense reimbursements, if you have any of those burning questions for us, email us at podcast@ecfa.org, and we'll do our best to tackle some of those questions on the next episode. Dan, why don't you close us out here with some encouragement and maybe some reminders from Scripture?
Okay, Michael. Well, you know, it's our responsibility to give the world the right impression of God. And one important way we do this is by avoiding conflicts of interest. By demonstrating the highest integrity in this area, it gives us great freedom to advance the name and fame of Jesus Christ. Hmm. I'm reminded of the Scripture in Ephesians 5:15-17, where it says, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is." You know, it's a day for wise decisions, bold actions for God, and discernment from the Holy Spirit.
Well, thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate that encouragement. We hope this podcast has gone a long way in helping churches, like you said, give the world the right impression of God. I think that's a great quote. Just the last reminder here is if you've enjoyed the podcast, we'd love for you to share it with your friends. Send the link, share it on social media, subscribe at iTunes, and we look forward to the next opportunity that we have to join you on the podcast. In the meantime, take care and God bless.